And in 3, 2, and 1. This week in Geek.
This Week in Geek, we talk about movies, game awards, and teamfight tactics.
Hello, hello, everybody. This is This Week in Geek, where, yeah, I say the same thing every week, so you know the spiel by now. Kevin, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Getting used to the new escape room job. That's pretty much it. It's that and playing Lethal Company with my friends, because it was one of my friend's birthdays and he was like, I want to play TFT with everyone. I'm like, okay, I'll play TFT, I guess. And then, or like, I'll play Lethal Company with you. And then I was like, I've made a mistake. I'm terrible at it. But that's just because like I still have to like learn everything about the game. But yeah. If you don't know what Lethal Company is, it's a game where you go around and you're tasked by the company to go out and gather material from planets, from deserted planets. But in these planets, there are monsters whose entire job is to like not be messed with. But your job is to go and take stuff and then sell it back to the company to meet quota. I'm learning how certain things operate. Like there's a nutcracker with a shotgun. There are random landmines and turrets. There's a bug that dances if you don't have anything.
This is the game where it's like, I've seen the clip where is this the game where like the ladder goes up and it comes down with a thonk and it knocks the dude out?
Yes. That happens all the time. When somebody is saying I'm putting down the ladder, you better move out the way. Like, for real. That's what I've been up to, just trying to learn that with my friends. But the hardest part is like the game uses proximity chat. So like the closer you are to like certain things, you could like hear certain like you could hear your friends getting absolutely destroyed on the other side of a wall.
Mm-hmm.
Or like they're underneath you and you just hear like the most wild unhinged screaming. But my friend group plays it at like midnight, so your boy can't be like doing comms and stuff. I'm quiet and I'm like, ah shit, I'm dead. Like I'll be like, there's something out there. You have to like mutter it or like murmur it like really quietly. People are like, what is that? And I'm like, all right, next time give me the radio so I could just like page everybody who has one. And so they're like, Kevin, you're either the most calm person when getting murdered or like your mom is about to like punch you in the back of the head mid game. And I'm like, it's a mix of both. I'm rapping like how Snoop Dogg rapped on or like my comms are like Snoop Dogg rapping on Drop It Like It's Hot. It just sounds like somebody, like he's trying to be very quiet during the whole thing. that's what's going on in my games. It's me being courteous of my family, but also wanting to like make the calls, you know?
Yeah. Is it in full access or is it still like early access beta right now?
It's still early access, but they did update a couple things. They added some more like characters, I guess, so to say, or like they added like Christmas themed stuff and then a couple of like newer enemies and monsters. So yeah, there's also a mod where there's one where it will repeat a line that your friend said, where like the monster repeats a line. And so sometimes you'll be like, wait, did you say that twice? And he's like, no. And then you're like, there's a monster close by that has like voice mimic. And I'm like, it's so scary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would not like that. I would not like that. Like, on the scale of, like, between comedic to terrifying, like, where does this game fall in line? Because I feel like from what I've seen, it's more on the comedy side, but I can see that's just watching the clips, but like I feel like playing it, it's a very different experience.
Yeah, for the most part, it's pretty comedic if you allow yourself to have like a little bit, how could I say it? You could have a little bit of fun with it. There's a couple of mods that like make the game like a little bit more wonky and fun. But I do think that the game is like, it's scary when you don't know what things do and like where you could possibly die. Like I've died multiple times just falling off of a staircase. Okay. And like, I'll be like, this is a hole. And I'll be like, oh wait, I didn't know that hole was that deep. And I'll just like die. Or I'll be like, I took a wrong step and now I'm in water and your character can't swim, so I just drowned. I have a clip from Twitch from my last run where a friend of mine is like, hey, if there's enough space behind the landmine, you could like hop over it and run before it explodes. And I'm like, he's like, you could jump over the mine if you're careful with it. I'm like, oh, okay. And so I'm like, I'm gonna do it. And so I ran over it and then it just explodes. He's like, he did not jump far enough. He's like, yep, he did not jump far enough. I'm like, I was lied to, man. I did. He didn't tell me anything. But yeah, overall, like the game, I think is pretty fun if you have like, especially if you have a group of friends who's willing to like let you experience the game as is before telling you anything. And I think that's like the best part of the game.
Just like go into it completely blind.
Like having friends who will not tell you how it works, because at a certain point you'll just be like, okay, like I'm just here to have fun with the game, you know? But half of them are just like, oh, don't run into that. And I'll be like, but what does it do? And so they'll be like, oh yeah, you don't have to worry about that bug because he doesn't hurt you unless you have anything. And I'm like, I got nothing, so I could vibe with this guy. And then there's other ones where it's like, if you don't look at it, it will come after you. And there's other ones that are like, if you look at it for too long, it will come after you. So it's like,
this game just sounds like fuck around and find out the game.
Yeah, it is. That's pretty much it. It is great.
Okay.
Oh, what about you? How's your week? How's everything going on your end?
I watched another movie that had to do with the trauma of Japan in the wake of World War II and people dying and lots of destruction and fires of a hospital, which was a fantastic movie called fantastic as in fantasy related, called The Boy and the Heron by Hayao Miyazaki. So I saw that, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But aside from that, I don't think I really did anything. Yeah, I just did a lot of sleeping, which was fantastic. So yeah. I didn't play anything. I just played Pikmin and watched that movie. So one thing I did do, I did it right before we hopped on, was what's the worst movie you've ever seen, Kevin? Because I had to watch the worst movie that I have ever seen again, because I'm talking about it on the Mars on Life podcast with my friend Ryan. And it's my fault because I suggested this movie as the worst movie I've ever seen. So that's why I watched it. But what's the worst movie you've ever seen?
That's a tough one. I don't know. Like, I can't even say The Room, because like The Room has its own like weird quirk to it. You know, it's not like it's terrible for the production side, but it's not like unbearable. You know, like you know you're going into it knowing that it's like a bad movie to start. So I don't know. I actually don't know what the worst movie. At least that like I could recall is, you know.
Okay, so mine is Lucy. Which, have you seen it?
Oh, is that is Lucy the one with? No, that's Salt. Is Salt? Wait, which one's Lucy?
Lucy is the 2014 film featuring Scarlett Johansson that kind of is a, it feels like a ripoff, a very heavy-handed, very low quality like very shitty story ripoff of Limitless. It's that same.
Is that the one where they were like 10% of your brain?
Yeah. And okay. She just like, she has a bag of drugs like shoved into her gut, and then it starts leaking. And for some reason, like she starts floating off the floor, and then she eventually turns into a USB drive, which is the stupidest ending for a movie I've ever seen. So that's what I did today, and I hated every second of it. But again, I suggested this film, so I have only myself to blame. Anyway, so going into it, have you seen The Boy and the Heron? Or are you planning on seeing it, Kevin?
I kind of want to see it. I need to find time to do it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm not. I won't spoil anything then, in case you do go see it. But this is allegedly gonna be Miyazaki's last movie.
I said that last time.
He said that since I think what 1997 with was it Mononoke was his last one in 97?
Something like that. He always says like it's gonna be my last one, and then he makes like Ponyo, and then he's like, this is my last one.
And like The Wind Rises was supposed to be his last one, and then he came out with this. It's like, okay, this is gonna be my last one. The man cannot stay away, and I for one don't mind that. And like keep making movies, because I feel like he is probably one of the only filmmakers out there right now that's still dedicated to the craft of hand drawing everything. And I still feel like he's like one of the very few auteurs actually left, especially in the animation space. So any content out of Studio Ghibli and any content out of Hayao Miyazaki, I think, is good content. I will say it's at the very least, it's something fun to look at and something beautiful to look at. And I do appreciate how, and a lot of people point this out about how his movies will kind of glorify the mundane in a way, and it makes it like, it makes living everyday life and like doing chores or stuff like that just seem kind of magical, which is very hard to do. And I don't know of any other filmmaker that can make something like that like possible in a film. Also, like watching all the food scenes in any Miyazaki movie is just, I want to eat everything in a Miyazaki movie. That being said, I don't want to like dissuade you from watching this movie, Kevin, because I think everyone should go see it. Because this might there is a chance. There is a very like possible non-zero chance that this is going to be his last film, because the man is like 82. So we don't know. But I don't feel like the story itself lived up to what I was expecting, considering he's given us amazing, like, very fleshed out narratives like Princess Mononoke, Castle in the Sky, Spirited Away, Kiki's Delivery Service, Ponyo, all of these things that are like very well fleshed out worlds. This just kind of felt like a fever dream, quite honestly. And I think the most interesting part was Robert Pattinson playing the Heron, because he sounds nothing like Robert Pattinson at all. So when I went to go see it the first time, I accidentally went to a screening that was like the subbed version and not the dubbed version. And like, I don't have an issue with sub or dub. It's just that like, I didn't actually see it then because I wanted to see what Robert Pattinson's voice was like, because like even in the trailers, you can tell it's like, oh, that's not what I expected Robert Pattinson to sound like. It's very like raspy and like an old man. And it's really interesting to, like, why would you hire Robert Pattinson than have him not sound like Robert Pattinson? Every other actor sounds like themselves. Like, you can tell when Mark Hamill's in there. You can tell when Florence Pugh is in there. You can tell when it's Dave Bautista. You can tell when it's Christian Bale. But when it's Robert Pattinson, it's like, who is this man? And what did you do with Robert Pattinson? But anyway, aside from that, this movie is probably his big, I think it definitely is his biggest number one. It's his biggest opening in the box office to date. It's currently number one. Not that there was a lot really that came out this week, but it made He currently debuted with 12.8 million, which is his first time being number one at the box office right now. Which is a lot, saying a lot considering like Spirited Away won an Oscar, or at least was nominated for an Oscar.
It won the Oscar.
Oh, it did win the Oscar.
It did.
Okay. So it won an Oscar. And considering just how many people are devotees of his films, I'm surprised that like 12.8 is the high point for him. But then again, like unless you are within like the culture that appreciates anime and animated films and like Japanese content, I guess maybe like places like maybe middle America or like Florida just wouldn't care and wouldn't go see it. I don't know. But go see it if you can. It's a fever dream. The story doesn't really make sense. And it takes a little bit of time to actually like get to the story and what's happening. A lot of it is spent just setting up the character, like the main character Mahito, and just his life and where he's coming from. I think I think it spends a little bit too long doing that. I wish the pace of it was a bit faster, and there's a lot you could probably have cut. But I wouldn't say it's a bad film. It's just, I think, not as strong as his other work. But it made money. It made 12.8 million so far. And that was just, it was opening weekend. So, okay, moving on. More movie things. Kevin, how many movies have you seen this year?
Oh, I don't think I've seen that many.
Okay.
I know I think the only one maybe might have been Spider-Verse.
Okay.
Unless I may have seen other ones, but like I genuinely don't remember. Okay. Oh wait, I only watch like anime films when they come out to the theaters. Like if it is. So the new Slam Dunk movie I saw, that was fun. Actually got me like into reading more Slam Dunk, which was a lot of fun. But yeah. I don't know. I don't really go see movies that much anymore. I don't know why.
Well, I mean, if there's nothing that interests you, then there's no reason to go to the theater. I mean,
true.
As much as I want to support movie theaters, it's like if I don't have to spend the gas to go there and like be tempted to spending like $20 on concessions, and then like, I mean, I don't pay for movie tickets anymore because I have the Regal app. But back when I was paying money for tickets, that's like $20 a pop, plus the $20 in concessions if I do, plus the gas to get there. So it's an investment to go to the movie theater sometimes. But back to IGN lists, or not a list, this is technically a poll, but they are putting out a poll for the best movie of 2023. And their nominees are, and I've seen most of these, I haven't seen Poor Things just came out. I didn't see that. I haven't seen Killers of the Flower Moon because I didn't get a chance to. And also it's like 3 hours long or 3.5 or something. And I don't want to sit in the theater for that long for what it all counts as a very gorgeous film, but a misery fest of like American history is terrible. And we should all be ashamed of what we did to the Native American people. But anyway, the nominees so far are Asteroid City, Barbie, John Wick Chapter 4, Killers of the Flower Moon, Oppenheimer, Across the Spider-Verse, Talk to Me, Poor Things, Joyride, The Boy and the Heron, and Other, which is etc. What do you think, Kevin? And I can run through the list again. But what do you think currently has the highest vote? And that list is Asteroid City, Barbie, John Wick, Killers of the Flower Moon, Oppenheimer, Across the Spider-Verse, Talk to Me, Poor Things, Joyride, The Boy and the Heron, and Other.
What do I think is the best movie from those?
Okay, what do you think is the best movie, and what do you think has the highest vote?
Okay. I think highest vote goes to, I think Barbie takes highest vote, just because it obviously had the Barbenheimer thing, and I think more people were inclined to see the Barbie side of it rather than the Oppenheimer side of it. But Across the Spider-Verse was a big like cultural thing, because like we've been waiting for that movie for like a while now, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And so I also
ever
think
since,
that
like, the trailer for the first one came out, people were like, okay, there's gonna be a sequel to this. There has to be.
Yeah. And I think overall, I think people will vote. I'm gonna put Spider-Verse just because I think it is a lot, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's Barbie or Oppenheimer in that spot, but I think the spot goes to Spider-Verse for this number.
Okay. Okay. So
just out of sheer popularity.
Sheer popularity. Okay. Currently, I mean, this is pretty much just a popularity contest anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, Spider-Verse sits at 21.1%, which is okay. Not the highest.
Hmm.
It's Oppenheimer.
Oh. Okay.
38%. The lowest in this poll is Joyride at 0.1%, which I didn't actually, that's another one I didn't go see. I just did not have the time. And by the time I did have the time, its time in the theater was up.
All right.
I voted for Barbie, but that was only 6.4%. John Wick somehow got more votes than that. I also think that, like, just looking at the comments, I think a lot of the people who voted and didn't vote for Barbie maybe are just angry man children. Like, there's someone who's saying that Sound of Freedom is one of the top two movies of the year. And you know, if they're saying that, they're just a miserable cuck who doesn't understand that, like, the people who made Sound of Freedom were also convicted of, or like, not even convicted, or like involved in child trafficking. So I don't really care what you say there. For me, I think the best movie of the year was The Holdovers. I enjoyed that movie a ton. Just because it was so real. And like, it was both comedic and like heartbreaking at the same time. Also, like, where was Godzilla Minus One on this list?
It's too new. I still need to see it, but I was invited to go see it, but I had to go and do a trivia tonight.
Ah, what company do you do trivia for? Because there's a company that does it down here too that I like.
I work for Res Events.
Okay, it's not the same company. The one that does it out here is King Trivia. Okay. Anyway, let's move on. More movie things. The Golden Globe nominations came out. This is the award ceremony that is conducted by the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, or it used to be until Penske Media took it over. And Penske Media owns all like the big media corporations in like entertainment, like Variety and actually I'm ashamed to do that. I worked for Variety. I should know this. Variety and Hollywood Reporter, Billboard. So like that's the company that runs it. I know the one of the vice presidents of the company, and he tried to get me to apply for a job, which I did, which I never heard back from again. But anyway, the Golden Globe Awards are going to be in 24 days. This had to be postponed already because of the strike in Hollywood, and now they have moved it to January. So currently, some of the bigger nominations are for Best Director is Bradley Cooper for Maestro, Celine Song for Past Lives, Christopher Nolan for Oppenheimer, Greta Gerwig for Barbie, Martin Scorsese for Killers of the Flower Moon, and Yorgos Lanthimos for Poor Things. Best Motion Picture for Animated is, oh god, I hate, they're doing the, it's Boy and the Heron, comma, the, but then later down in the list you have the Super Mario Brothers movie, so I don't understand that listing.
Yeah, wait, hold up. The formatting's weird.
Boy and the Heron, comma, the, Elemental, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, the Super Mario's movie, Suzume, and Wish. Didn't you see Suzume, Kevin?
I did see Suzume. I do think, I don't know if it's good and like it's fine for a nomination. I just don't see it taking an award over Spider-Verse.
Mm-hmm. I think Spider-Verse should win this. I haven't seen Elemental. I
haven't either.
People have said it's good. I just can't find the time to sit down and watch it. Mm-hmm. I just, another thing about Pixar, I think we mentioned it before, is that compared to other studios, like, Pixar isn't innovating with their visual style. They did a little bit with Turning Red. There was a lot that they did unique there. But compared to like the attention to detail and what they did with Across the Spider-Verse, or like even like I hate Illumination, but kind of how faithfully they recreated what Mario looks like in this movie. Like Pixar has nothing on them. Mm-hmm. Nothing. Best motion picture for a drama. It comes to Anatomy of a Fall, Killers of the Flower Moon, Past Lives, Zone of Interest, Maestro, and Oppenheimer. Best motion picture for musical or comedy goes to Air, American Fiction, Barbie, Holdovers, comma, The, May, December, and Poor Things. Let's see. Original song. This was an interesting one because of the two songs that I think are currently the pop culture favorites to win. Best song is Addicted to Romance by Bruce Springsteen. Dance the Night by Mark Ronson, Dua Lipa, Andrew Wyatt, and Caroline Aylin. I'm Just Ken by Mark Ronson and Andrew Wyatt. Peaches by Jack Black, Aaron Horvath, Michael Jelinek, Eric Osman, and John Spiker. Road to Freedom by Lenny Kravitz, and What Was I Made For by Billie Eilish and Finneas. Best performance is from Brie Larson, Ali Wong, Elizabeth Olsen, Juno Temple, Rachel Weisz, and Riley Keough. I forgot this also goes into the Golden Globe Awards also do television too. So mixed in with all this is TV and movies. Unlike how the Oscars and the Emmys are broken up. Where's Best Actor? Because we just did Best Female. Oh, this is broken out into like limited male, limited female. I don't want to read all these. This is a lot. Anyway, look at the list if you want to see if your favorite people were nominated. It's the beginning of award season. So I think like the Golden Globes out of all the awards, I'm sorry to say this, Tim, but I think the Golden Globes are the least influential, even though they're first. Like people don't typically care as much about the Golden Globes, I think, as they do about the Emmys or the Oscars. Plus, there's been a lot of controversy over the past few years about the previous runners of the Golden Globe Awards, the Hollywood Foreign Press Association. There was controversy over them not having as many people of color, or like no people of color, be part of the voting body on that, which I mean, there's a little bit of leeway where they can kind of defend themselves in that it's the Foreign Press Association and other countries don't have as much inherent, I guess, diversity as melting pot countries like America, but still you should at least have striven to have a little bit more diversity in your voting body. Yeah. Golden Globe Awards. January, we'll just tell you who wins when we get there, I suppose. The Game Awards, Kevin, is another thing that happened, except we have the winners actually this time.
Yay.
Game of the Year did go to Baldur's Gate.
All I did was I saw the meme. I watched some of it because like I caught some of it while I was at the escape room, not paying attention to a room. Smile. I was like, oh, Game Awards are tonight, so like I'll keep tabs every once in a while, I'll glance over. But like, I mean, we could go over some of the winners.
Yeah.
But the funniest thing that I got out of it was whatever you think is gonna win. And if Baldur's Gate 3 is in the list, it's going to go to Baldur's Gate.
For Best Narrative, that went to Alan Wake.
Yeah, and it's like every once in a while, you'll roll the dice and you'll just get Alan Wake. So, but yeah.
I did see the flute guy came back this year. What was he playing?
Yes, he did. He's playing an oboe, I think, this year.
Okay. Best Performance did not, it went to, again, to Baldur's Gate. But I think it was interesting because Christopher Judge came up. Was he announcing that award, or what did he win for?
For Baldur's Gate?
No, Christopher Judge for God of War. Did God of War win anything?
I don't remember.
Okay, the thing is, something that made news for this year's Game Awards was Christopher Judge came up and he was making a speech. I'm guessing since he did not win Best Performance, he was probably presenting an award, but he made a dig at Call of Duty this year. He said, my speech last year, or the last time I was here, was longer than the entire Call of Duty campaign for this year. And instead of like taking it gracefully or just being in on the joke, a lot of the Call of Duty devs got really salty and like went online to say, oh, you, that's such a low blow. I was like, oh, I can't believe you're making fun of another person from the industry. And then the entire internet just kind of came down on them and said, you guys are Call of Duty. You don't really deserve to be called video game anymore. Like, you guys are Call of Duty. Like, calm down. You're not that serious. You're not going to win anything anyway. Like, no one really takes Call of Duty seriously. So,
Call of Duty has literally just been releasing patches for the past like 8 years. Like, it's you're not putting out a new game.
Yeah.
You're not putting out a new game. You're just putting out patch notes.
Like that, even in recent years, like people have I haven't played Call of Duty in forever, but what I've seen is like people are just getting kind of fed up with how the quality of the game is decreasing each time. So,
oh yeah,
I don't know. I don't feel like pitting yourself against God of War, Kratos, who everybody loves and everyone agreed that the two games that have come out are masterpieces. I don't think as Call of Duty you should be trying to go head to head with that. Come on.
I feel like Call of Duty shouldn't talk until they get at least a nomination. Like,
that's never going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, put out a quality game before you like open your mouth. That's honestly the way how it is. It's just you're getting beat by literally everyone else in the industry. Like, do better.
I think the only thing that they can beat right now is probably Overwatch just because people are salty.
Yeah. Like, the only thing that Call of Duty can do possibly is, like, try to win best mobile game next year. Like,
That's a big if.
Yeah, like, as long as Hoyo doesn't put out anything next year, you should be okay. I'm just gonna say it. Hello Kitty Island Adventure should have won best mobile game of the year. I just think that's a non-controversial take. I mean, Honkai Star Rail is good, but it also has a PC platform. Hello Kitty Island Adventure.
Okay, so just running through a couple of the categories, I guess. Super Mario Brothers Wonder won for Best Family Game. Continuing that joke. Best Indie Game. If this would load. Best Indie Game was Sea of Stars. Best Debut Indie Game was Cocoon, which I haven't seen anything on either of those games or like heard anything about them, but I guess they're good if they won. Best ongoing is Cyberpunk 2077, which is so interesting to me considering like how much hate this game got when it first came out. But I mean, like, I guess this is what happened with Witcher 3 also. Like, when it came out, it was a mess, but then they kept patching it to the point where now it, like, by the time I played it, it was really good. I haven't played Cyberpunk since it came out. And like, honestly, there were a few frustrating bugs, but nothing super terrible. I enjoyed Cyberpunk. I haven't played the DLC, but I kind of want to go back and buy it and play it. Best community support does not go to Overwatch. It goes to Baldur's Gate 3. Again, like Kevin mentioned, if Baldur's Gate is in the nominations, it's probably going to get it. Best esports game went to
Valorant, I think, this year.
Yep, absolutely. Went to Valorant. I could kind of see that one coming.
Okay, the only one that I kind of got mad at was Best Mobile Game. I understand that, yes, Honkai Star Rail is technically the best out of all of these options, but it should have went to Hello Kitty Island Adventure.
Oh, my God. Island Adventure? Sign me up.
Because, like, Honkai Star Rail also has a PC version. Like, they have the graphics capacity.
Mm-hmm.
Hello Kitty Island Adventure is its own thing. It's a vibe. Like, let them cook. Like, they got the nomination. Let them win.
I mean, if they at least they can say that. Like, Call of Duty cannot.
Yeah, imagine this game getting nominated and you're not even in the conversation.
Damn, Hello Kitty can dunk on Call of Duty.
Yeah.
Street Fighter won for best fighting game. Most anticipated game went to Final Fantasy VII Rebirth over Hades.
I think
2.
I would have went Hades too.
It beat Hades, it beat Like a Dragon, it beat Star Wars, and it beat Tekken.
Yeah.
That's surprising to me. I would have said Hades, considering how massive that game was. And I think it won Game of the Year, right? Back in its day? So,
yeah.
Hades 2, okay. Okay. You beat us out, Final Fantasy. Any other ones that, like, stood out to you, Kevin?
I mean, I got to see, what is it? Iron Mouse's response to winning Content Creator of the Year. She thought Quackity was going to win it, but she did. And, like, honestly, Iron Mouse does a lot of good stuff for the community. So congrats to her.
Well, congrats to all the winners, and we will see what wins next year. Okay, Kevin, speaking of game things, E3, have you heard?
No, it's not doing so good.
There's no more ease for the E3. It's gone. It's dead, unfortunately. I hope that they would have had it like at least one more go through, like one more round of E3, but no, unfortunately, it's not happening anymore. I think it was just today. Yeah, today we got the announcement from the Entertainment Software Association. They put out a statement that said, after more than two decades of E3, each one bigger than the last, the time has come to say goodbye. Thanks for the memories. Good game. Well played. Yeah, this is sad to see because I mean, I've never went to any E3s, but I always looked forward to that time of year just because of like all the announcements and everything that came out of E3. Like, it was something to look forward to. It was just a big day for like the gamer community, and I guess just it became too expensive, and it just, I guess for a lot of companies, it didn't make sense having to spend that much money to share the stage with their competitors when they could just have events that were more like, were a lot cheaper to produce, and they could spotlight whatever they wanted to. And not have to like just pick and choose what they wanted to showcase. They could showcase everything they wanted to. How do you feel about like this, Kevin? Like, do you think that it's some? Do you think that like we were? I mean, just considering now that we have Nintendo Directs or the PlayStation like State of Play or like Microsoft's like own announcements and things like that. Do you think like we needed an E3? Do you think that we could have still benefited from having it, or is it just kind of? Would it really have not done anything except just be another expensive event to produce, or even just like a community day?
Like, I like the concept of E3, and I don't know if there's like a, I don't know if there's a good replacement for it. Like, I understand like E3 was mainly used for like announcements of things, and like we all were looking forward to stuff, but in like today's landscape, obviously a lot of them are just choosing to do directs or showcases, right?
Yeah.
But the thing that I would have liked, I don't know if there is a place that does this yet, but if they were to do something where it's pretty much just like a, like, it's not like PAX or anything like that, but a convention where you could like play test some of these games, like, you like, even if you have to sign like an NDA to enter, I think it would be beneficial to have like some people like test out your game in like a big setting. If you want to test out like, you know, either AAA or like whatever big announcement games there are, like that is a better experience in itself rather than having to like wait for announcements or anything. And I feel like we're gonna miss out on that ability. Like, they'll just do like small beta tests and alpha tests, but I would much rather have like, I think a convention where people can test out some of these games or try some of these games is more like beneficial for that sake.
Yeah, I guess being able to like have a hands-on access to something as opposed to like people are actually like getting their hands on the actual product as opposed to just watching cutscenes, which was like a lot of what came out of E3 was just trailers and cutscenes sometimes. If you were just like waiting for all the trailers, if you were there, like obviously you got to experience everything, which is what drew people to actually going there as opposed to just waiting online for things. But I don't know. E3 left behind a legacy, and they started in 1995, so they had a very good run, but it's just like, I think the internet and also COVID really killed it. It would have been nice if they had gotten like at least one, because they were still trying to come back. They were still trying to make something. So I guess if they had had, it would have been nice to see if they had one last hurrah to see if there was anything like worth doing in this new age of like companies having their own directs. But I guess the money didn't make sense. You know what else doesn't make sense, Kevin? Trying to sue Rockstar over your parody likeness being put into a game. So yeah, you know how last week we were talking about the all the references that are included in the GTA 6 trailer. So the guy who they based, like, if you watch the trailer, there's this guy with like tattoos all over his face. He's the Florida Joker. He came out with like this video. I actually don't even know what he is, what he's from or what he did. It looks like he got arrested or something and tattoos all over his face. Anyway, he came out with a video pausing it and saying like, "Whoa, that's me. That's my likeness. Rockstar, you used my likeness without my permission. Like, you owe me, like, we got to talk. I'm going to sue you, or at least like give me $1 million or $2 million or two or something like that." But the thing is like, parody is protected by law. So you're allowed to parody things. And like, this isn't the first time that people have tried to sue Rockstar before. Like, Lindsay Lohan tried to sue Rockstar over GTA 5 for like using her likeness on like the promos and the box art or whatever. And she lost that lawsuit there. So like, if you, where do you think you can get away with like suing Rockstar if Lindsay Lohan herself, who is like a big name celebrity who has resources and is much more well known, can like not even get a lawsuit there? And it's like with South Park too. South Park does this thing all the time. They like very clearly use the likenesses of celebrities or people, or like, but they tweak it to be like parody, so they're safe. So like, why would you even think that you have a chance against Rockstar here?
Yeah, don't even try. Just be glad that you're in the game.
Like, Kevin, if for some reason like you did something that was noteworthy, not even saying like good or positive, positive or negative here, just like something noteworthy, and Rockstar decided to like, hey, let's put them in a trailer for our game, like, what would your reaction be? Like, mine would definitely not be to try to sue the company that clearly has run this through legal and knows that they're okay to do it.
Oh yeah, for sure. Like, I would just be, I think it'd be fun just to be like, this is what I do. Like, I know what's going on here. So
like now you can like use that to your advantage, I guess. Now they're like, hey, I'm important enough to be parodied by Rockstar. Oh boy. Frivolous lawsuits. Like, this isn't gonna go anywhere. This guy's an idiot. You know what else I think is not gonna go anywhere, Kevin? So you know what the nerd emoji looks like, right?
Yeah.
It's the glasses with the buck teeth and the weird stupid smile. So there's a child who's 10 years old in England. His name is Teddy. and he's starting a campaign to get the emoji removed or changed. He specifically wants to get rid of the teeth because he says it's offensive to people who are wearing glasses. He said, "We want to change this. Apple is making it absolutely horrible for people wearing glasses." And if you look at the kid, he really looks like the nerd emoji.
He does.
I'm a bit like, I have two minds of this. On one hand, it's like, I can see how some, like, the image of the nerd has been around for forever. And it's like, it can be harmful a little bit. Like, as a kid who had glasses and braces at the same time for a couple of years, like, yeah, it wasn't the best depiction or image to have. But also, like, it's kind of a joke. And I think that by protesting this, he's making it worse. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know how to, like, eloquently put this. And this feels bad to say, but this is, I feel like, you see kids like this and you're like, oh, you need to be bullied, my child. You kind of deserve it for this.
You know, sometimes if Apple is willing to include your likeness, I think you should just accept it. I use this nerd emoji every once in a while as well. I just think that, like, it's good when you're trying to make a point, but I don't think you need to protest it. I don't think that they're going to change it.
No, and I don't think they should. It's like, it's a common, like, just, yes, it's a stereotype, but it's not like too bad.
It's not harmful.
Of a negative scare. It's not. Like, it's really not.
Yeah.
Like, his version of the emoji is just it's really poorly drawn. It's like atrociously drawn. I mean, this kid needs art lessons, but it's like, it's just got the glasses and a stupid smile. That's not like indicative of anything at all. That doesn't get the point across that it's supposed to be like a nerd or a smart person. It's just a guy with glasses. It's kind of sad that the buck teeth is what gives it the idea of a nerd. But I mean, that's kind of what it does. And like, Apple has changed emojis before. Like, they took away the gun emoji and made it a squirt gun. I think the syringe emoji, they took out the blood in the syringe, so it's just like a syringe. And I think that was done during the when they were really trying to get people to get vaccinated, so people could use that as an emoji for the vaccine without being it so, quote, graphic, as the New York Post calls it. But he wants to call it the genius emoji, his newly redesigned one. But like, what about that says genius? It's just a guy in glasses. This is such a stupid first world problem. I don't know why it bugs me, but it's just like, this kid, like, bro, like, I went through the bullying ring. You should too. Which is as horrible as it is to say. It's like, this is not a fight that I think you want to pick. And I think by picking it, you're just making it worse for yourself. Now, like, forever, if anyone looks you up on the internet, you're going to be that idiot kid who looks like the nerd emoji.
Yeah.
And you're just going to... You're just making it easier for people to pick on you, my dude. Some fights are not worth it. Anyway, that's it for me this week. Kevin, tell us about weeby things and anime and the what is it? The dodgeball tournament happened, right?
Yes, it did. I did not catch enough of it because I was at work. I really wanted to sit down and watch all of it, but apparently there were a couple of different teams. I think there were like three teams, but they were all representing like a different platform that they all stream from. So there were like the Twitch people, there was YouTube, Facebook streamers, Kick streamers. The cool thing though, I think probably the funniest thing is I think it's John Clint, Tom Clint, Dan. I'm losing my mind. One of the founders of Twitch, one of the current, like, not CEOs, but like one of the big developmental people who has been like a part of the design team kind of since the beginning, decided to play in the dodgeball tournament as well. So having like the Twitch CEO playing alongside some of the Twitch streamers is really cool. Ludwig also participated in a couple of the games as well, just because they had a large enough roster to rotate some players through. Overall, dodgeball event, pretty good. Have to give them thumbs up for that. On top of TFT, or on top of dodgeball this weekend, we had the TFT Vegas Open, which happened during the weekend as well. Lots of esports stuff that I couldn't keep up with, but TFT Vegas opening, if you guys don't know, TFT is Teamfight Tactics. It's a Riot auto chess game. They had their, like, they had a LAN event that had 512 players playing for it.
Ooh, that's a lot of players.
Yeah, and they whittled it down to 8 on the last day.
From
which
500
is,
to 8?
512 to 8.
Oh my God.
And then the last day was really wild, because the way how the rules worked is, like, you had to meet a certain threshold in terms of your placement first, and then you had to win. You had to get, mm-hmm. like, first place out of 8. So the last day was, like, really, really crazy. A lot of compositions that a lot of players weren't keeping their eyes out for ended up showing up in the TFT Vegas Open, because, you know, it is a smaller meta and there are things that can kind of, you could get away with. The composition that won was Spellweaver Annie, which is a, like, you get early Annie with a certain, like, trait that's doubled. And then you just build around that. So they did pretty well on that. Other things that a lot of people didn't keep in mind were Crowd Diver Yone, which is it's a unit that got a small buff during the patch, right before Vegas. And a lot of people were like, oh, okay, well, it's okay, kind of. And then it just starts destroying everybody during the actual event. So people have to take note of it. And that is a thing. And then the other one is Senna for true damage. So true damage and Caitlyn has also been helpful for that. So yeah, a lot of random compositions that we as players wouldn't normally consider that high tier. But after we see the Vegas Open, after we see people get multiple, like, wins with it, you have to give them props and being creative with the play style and finding ways to win the games, you know?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Last but not least, we just have our manga releases. A couple of things that we want to keep in mind. First things first, manga releases for this week. We have Shy 5, Akane Banashi 3, and Demons of the Shadow Realm 3. That comes out today. On top of that, there's a couple other ones that I am keeping my eyes on. I have, like, Marshall 14 as well and Die Dark 6. But those are just kind of the big ones that we're keeping our tabs on. The last one for the manga releases are for next week. We have Homunculus Omnibus 3, which is volumes 5 and 6. We have Rent-A-Girlfriend 22 and Alice in Borderlands 8. That is going to be the second to last volume of Alice in Borderland, because Alice in Borderland originally had an 18 volume run in Japan. And each one of these volumes that we get is a 2-in-1 here in the States. So Alice 8 is the furthest it's going to go. And then we'll probably get Alice 9 sometime in the middle of next year. So looking forward to getting that. Other things that, if you guys are keeping tabs on it, Slime 23 is coming out and Kobayashi 13 is also coming out. So just a couple of other books that if you're looking to up your, how can I say it? If you're looking to add more to your shelf this holiday season, those might be a couple of them that you want to keep in mind. Yep. And that is it for me this week. Pretty much just enjoying whatever manga and anime I happen to be watching. Still keeping tabs on Spy Family and Frieren. We'll see if anything else comes out this week. I know a lot of people are trying to keep tabs and keep up with JJK. That is still a lot that we have to go over. And then same thing with Zom 100 when it does eventually come out closer to the end of the year. I'll give you tabs and where it ends in terms of the manga for that one.
This is a very broad question, Kevin. What do you think makes it for a good manga collection?
What makes a good manga collection is a collection of books that you are willing to read more than once. That is the best way of putting it. It could literally be anything. Like, if you have, like, honestly, like, one series that you like, and you want to really build around it, you can do that. And I would consider that, like, a simple, like, even a very nice collection that you could just keep together. For me, my collection is pretty much just, like, trying to balance out, like, trying to cover a good variety of genres, but also, like, have enough variation where it doesn't, you don't fall into the stereotypical, like, you're a guy, so you read this, right? which is, like, okay, I'm gonna call out majority of the manga community here. There are two sides of the manga community. There are the guys, the depressed, edgy guys who have, okay, if you have these on your shelf, you're a part of this group. You have AOT, you have Berserk, you have Vinland Saga, you have Vagabond. Those are your four that you want to collect. It's just like, I am a lone wolf. I am battling the craziest things I've ever seen, and it's all a metaphor for depression. Then there's the other side, which is like enjoying every single possible rom-com possible, which is like you have Komi, you have what is it? You have Komi, you have Horimiya, you have maybe, yeah, what's another like really typical one? You have like a bunch of other ones that are like pretty like cute. I have Wotokoi on my list, and what is it, My Happy Marriage. So just like a bunch of like really good rom-coms, right? Those are like the two camps that you have for like the adults, and then the kids have everything that's Shonen Jump. So it's just like, mm-hmm, Hero Academy, Naruto, Bleach, One Piece, like all of those ones are for them. And then like for me personally, I want to bounce between the three of those and then just like get what I consider good and add it to the shelf. Yeah. I do the rule where I'll read a little bit or like maybe chapter 1 to 3 if I really like the series, and then I'll go and buy the physicals from that point forward. That's how I usually like gauge a series that I'm like, I am going to read this one. Like, there are some that like I have on my shelf that I'm trying to either sell or rotate through. But there are other ones where I'm like, that was a ride. That was worth the ride. I am keeping, mm-hmm, this 100%. So, yeah, I mean, that's the best way of how to describe it. It's like, if I enjoy a manga to the point where I am looking forward to its release date, like months or even like multiple months in advance, not even like weeks in advance, multiple months in advance, I'm like, this is a series that I'm going to keep tabs on, and I'm going to read it the second that it drops in the States. Those are the series that you should be collecting first. The thing that I wouldn't recommend, and this is a small thing for manga peeps, do not create a volume one graveyard. In other words,
a what now?
So volume one graveyards are a thing. I need to write the script for this, but it is essentially when you buy volume one of a manga because you picked it up off the shelf and you think that it's good, right? And then, uh-huh, you read it and then you're like, I don't want to continue the series. There is like, either there's other things that are more towards your selective taste that you like more, or you would much rather prioritize buying other volumes or other series first, right? So I have fallen into the trap. I have a couple of volume one stuff that I'm like, I probably shouldn't have bought it, but I mean, I as a content creator, this is like just ideal create giveaway thing, you know? But yeah, I would recommend either reading through the entirety of a volume or like volume one and then deciding to go on forward if you really want to collect more. Or ask me, honestly, like I've read a stupid amount and I might have insight of like things that you should do or do not for volume ones.
You mentioned Komi, and that's like one of the few manga that I've read recently. And like, I don't religiously read it, but I was in a Walmart one time, and I was walking through the book section, and there was an issue. I was like, oh, I'll just stand here where no one else is around and read it. And I did. And one of the things that, like, I don't remember what issue it was, but there was one panel where it's just like a close up of boobs, and the caption was, "The artist just wanted to draw this." And I'm like,
I'm trying to remember which volume that would be.
I don't know. But it was just like, oh, okay, so this is where Komi is going from here on. Okay. But like, is the, for you, Kevin, and this is probably very like highly individual criteria, but like how games, like there's certain aspects of a game that makes it replayable, whether it's like it's a new game plus, or like there's stuff that happens after the end game, or like if the story like actually invites you to like play it again, and you'll understand the details when you play it a second time through better than like you understand the story more with more context now that you know the ending. Games have that, like is there a specific criteria that you find in manga when you're reading it that makes it like where you're willing to read it more than once? Like there's certain books that like I'll just go to because they're comfort books that I'll just read them over and over again, but that's mainly because of the nostalgia factor for me.
Well, what gives volumes or series replay value? I do like things that when you finish the volume or you finish the series, it makes you think about what everything else was for, you know? I mean, AOT is probably the most recent example of this, where like you read through everything and you find out that everything was planned from day one. Like all the twists and turns that the characters were going to go through, there is a reason why it was done at this certain point, right? And that's what gives that series like a really good replay value or like a good reread value. For me personally, it's just like, besides it being like comfort picks, sometimes for me it is like story based. Like I know that a lot of people will ask me for a manga rec that, or like storytelling elements that I genuinely like, or differences in style that I find very enjoyable. So that's what gives me like a couple of reread value, like to go back and study why certain characters are doing things, or like I guess not necessarily like plot stuff, but more of like interesting things that other mangaka don't do. The best thing that I could explain is like in Witch Hat Atelier by Kamome Shirahama, and I think it's in volume 9, there are ways to like do scenes that seem hectic, right? And in this one volume, they go to like a festival, and it's like this big celebration for all of these witches and wizards that come together and essentially show off what they can do, like what inventions they can make to better humanity, right?
Right.
But instead of it being like, oh, the character went here, then went here, then went here, and then eventually went back to the back to their tent, right? That could have been done in a series of different panels where it just shows you like, this is something cool, this is something cool that they did, this is something that they ate, so on and so forth, right? The way how Kamome like, I guess the panel did. Yeah, that's the best way of saying it. How they plotted out the page was a board game. You play a 6D board game where you start on like your main square, and then you roll a die, and you play essentially like a chutes and ladders game to see how characters, like, if they ran into something during the festival, how would it affect their day? And like, their entire goal is to just get back before time runs out. And they say, like, okay, you have like X amount of turns to get back to the main tent. So while you as the reader get to essentially play a board game and figure out if you can make it back in time, you're also learning about what are all the possible things that the characters could have done during that time. Like, for example, like, there's ones where it's like, eat really good food, skip your next turn, right? So you're like, okay, they had like really nice food and they can't leave it because they're taking their time enjoying that food, right? And so on and so forth. So like, that's something that's unique that I like. Plus, art is pretty from Kamome. But yeah, there's just like a bunch of like really interesting, like, not only character designs, but like storytelling elements that I genuinely like. And I keep going back to either reread it or to be like, my friends will be like, what's a nice series I should be reading right now? And I'll be like, all right, give me a minute. Let me look at the shelf.
What's your number one most reread manga, I guess, to close this out, and why?
All right. Time to look at the shelf. Most reread manga. Which one have I gone back to the most? Okay. I think there's a good toss-up between two of them. I always go back to Descending Stories, Rakugo Shinju, because, like, one, it's a great anime, but the manga also goes into detail a little bit more about Rakugo, which is a traditional, like, Japanese storytelling art. Mm-hmm. If you guys don't know, it's like one person, like, it's like a one person theater, but you tell everything via, one, the actor does not get up. They're sitting down, they're like kneeling the whole time, but they have to change the inflection of their voice and direction of their speech to portray one or more characters, right? So it does get a little hectic, but you start to learn certain things that they do. Plus, the stories are like traditional Japanese stories, so it's really cool to like listen in on like some of the lessons that they were teaching via oral tradition. And that's one part of the reason why I like that series. The other one that I tend to go back to, and this is totally for like weirder reasons, is I every once in a while will go back and read a couple volumes of Delicious in Dungeon, which is Dungeon Meshi is getting an anime adaptation next year. So I think it's quarter one of next year. So I'm kind of excited to see it. But I go back because like I'm like, what food? Like, it's D&D with food elements in it. So sometimes you just go to it and you're like, man, I wonder what scorpion would taste like if you cooked it like this, or like, if I had a basilisk omelet, how would that taste, right? So like, sometimes I'll just go back to it and be like, I'm gonna make something close to this because I'm hungry, and I'll just go down that rabbit hole for like a minute. I know that the author hasn't put out necessarily a one-to-one, but you can tell what kind of food it is by the way how it presents itself in the manga.
That's one of the one that, and what's the PTSD radio? Those are the two that you've mentioned that I really want to eventually check out: Delicious in Dungeon and PTSD radio, and then mm-hmm. Komi, because Komi's always good. But
yeah, I feel like here's the thing. I'm gonna let you in on Komi. Komi right now I think is at 28 volumes, something like that, 28, 29. I think that, I don't even know if the mangaka plans on stopping anytime soon, but I would assume that sometime in the near future there should be a box set.
Ooh.
And I think that a Komi box set, even if it's like volumes like 1 through like 20, would be really good, just because like people want to collect it.
Yeah.
And adding more to it would just, you know, make it better. It would also be cute if you did a notebook that has a list of Komi's friends so far.
Like, oh, that'd be really
in
cool.
That as well. Like, that's like another like little thing. I feel like just hire me, manga companies. I will create your box set. Like, that's the thing. I feel like there's a lot of good series out there that, one, deserve a box set. And then, two, I'm planning on doing a TikTok on this topic pretty soon, but I think this may be a hot take, but I think that manga companies should be able to sell empty box sets for collectors. Because here's the thing. One, like, us as collectors have been collecting and reading the volumes since release, right? We're out here just reading every single volume when it drops. But when you release a box set, you essentially tell like everybody who's been buying your books for like the past like year, not even like 2 or 3 years now, just like a big middle finger and being like, yeah, remember you spent all that money? Well, here's everything and more, but cheaper. And I'm like, can we just do the opposite where like, okay, you can charge us like X amount for a box set. That way we could at least just put our books in the box. So when we want to display it, we don't have to like pay another $100 and X and then sell the series again, you know?
Yeah. And I feel like just like having a set in a box, just as a collector, having a set of things and a nice box to display things just makes you want to buy it even more, because it's like the special edition effect where even if you already have it, it's nice to have a commemorative version, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, thank you all for tuning in with us this week. Buy manga, buy anime, watch artistic movies and things like that so that artists can survive. Anyway,
yeah.
Thanks for tuning in. We will catch you next week, and then the week after we'll probably take a break because it's the holiday season. But yeah, we'll see you soon. Adios.
Next week, we bring you the latest news and stories from around the internet.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode. If you like what you hear, please subscribe to us and rate us 5 stars on all your favorite podcast platforms. You can also follow us on all social media at TwigPod, that's TWIGPOD, and feel free to send us any questions, comments, or any suggestions of topics you'd like us to cover. If you'd like to advertise with our show, please contact our network at Bleav.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next week in Geek.